Welcome back to season 3 of the podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Blackwood. As many of you know, I wrote my autobiography as a survivor of human trafficking called Custom Justice. But if you didn't know, you do now. Keeping in line with that, this entire season has been focused on interviewing people who did or plan to write about their own experiences as trauma survivors and how they overcame their past. If that sounds like you, reach out. We can talk about having you on the show, too. As much as we all hate commercials, they are a necessary evil these days. This is what keeps the show on the air. You can also show support by purchasing one of my mini books or donating through PayPal. You can find the links to either option in the podcast description. As always, a portion of the proceeds do go to local organizations that help fight human trafficking. Welcome back to the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Amanda Blackwood. I have a gentleman with me today with an unusual nickname that might kind of take you by surprise. He goes by repeatedly Dead Fred, and when he tells you his story as to where that nickname came from, it's all going to make sense. Welcome to the show, Fred. I'm super excited to get to know you today.
Thank you, Amanda. I'm happy to be here. Actually, I'm happy to be anywhere.
I bet you are with your story. My word. So I usually start out the podcast by asking my guests, where are you originally from? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a prairie city called Winnipeg in province of Manitoba in Canada. And I am currently in Toronto, the center of the universe, according to some people.
And I love Canada. I've been there a few times. I used to be a flight attendant, would fly up there all the time. It's one of my favorite countries outside of the U.S. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about your journey. What happened? What was your traumatic event that kind of catapulted you into writing your book and telling your story?
Well, I went through an absurd large amount of medical trauma and just a continuous loop that somebody calculated to me that the odds of my going through all this and still being alive is the equivalent of winning a weekly lottery every day for 5 years.
Goodness.
So all sorts of medical cognitive dissonance and medical bias and, everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And I don't want to make it seem like I'm slamming the medical system because every system has its ups and downs. This is just what happened to me, and I'm not assigning blame. I'm just telling my story. So, in the summer of 2009, I started passing out randomly, or that's what the doctors initially thought. And they kept trying to prove I was having a heart attack. And I wasn't having heart attacks, but you'd think, after you test somebody, 10, 12, 15 times, and you see they're not having a heart attack, maybe you should try and think something else might be going on. And it took a long time for that to happen. So it took until August of 2009 for them to figure out that what was actually going on was my heart was stopping. And I don't know about you guys, but when my heart, I tend to die.
So. I think that's the general consensus.
Yeah. So I had the double whammy of, my heart would stop beating, no blood to the brain, no oxygen, and I would collapse. And most of the times I collapsed, I managed to hit my head on what object in the vicinity and obtained a bunch of concussions on top of the, lack of oxygen and all the other trauma that happens to your body when your heart stops. And then we went from there. And so that's sort of the basics of what happened to me. And then they corrected it with a pacemaker, and which was great until the pacemaker failed.
The things aren't supposed to fail.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And It's sort of what happens when you buy your medical supplies at the dollar store. So, yeah, there's a whole bunch of conspiracy things in my mind anyway, that something happened in this surgery that didn't go into the surgical report, and it made the pacemaker wires prone to cracking. And so they short circuit, and they short circuit, you short circuit.
Yes.
So I had a couple more adventures in 2013 with more surgeries, and then again in 2018. And this, you know, I'm going beyond my first book here, The Summer I Died 20 Times. And I just had another surgery with a pacemaker replacement in November of 2022, where they worked some Harry Potter level wizardry on me.
And goodness gracious.
Yeah, it's been quite the adventure.
Wow. So when a pacemaker gives out, boy, that was a Southern accent that just came out there. Mm-hmm. When a pacemaker gives out, do you know immediately? Do you have like internal warning signs? Do you have a medical device that is a monitor? How do you know?
Basically, you feel your heart stopping because you're not getting oxygenated, and then you're gone. Like,
wow,
you're just gone.
So it happens that quick when your pacemaker gives out.
Yeah, the odd time I was able to get me, and so when I fell, it wasn't as traumatic as the other times. But if you're standing, I'm like 7 feet tall or anything, but it's a big difference, you know, falling over from it is from fully standing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Falling from a full height, you got to have all kinds of issues just coming up from that. First of all, your heart's just giving out because your pacemaker, but then you got to deal with, you know, concussions and bleeding and injuries and possibly broken bones. I mean, mm-hmm. At that point, you're just an instant mess.
Yeah. That's the amazing thing. For all the times I hit whatever part of my head, I didn't break anything.
Wow.
You know, I did get cut a few times. Depending on the way you fall and what you fall against, you know, if you fall at the right angle and you're wearing glasses, you can end up with glasses cutting you and giving you some pretty good shiners. But I've conked myself ribs, commercial cement countertops, manhole covers.
Oh my gosh.
You know, I mean, sometimes I feel like I'm Wile E. Coyote, if you remember that comic.
I love Looney Tunes.
Yeah. It's just all the most ridiculous ways to die or to get a concussion. That seemed to be what I was experiencing.
Just everything short of having the anvil dropped on your head, it sounds like.
Oh, I forgot to mention that one.
So how has all of this trauma, kind of impacted your life going forward?
Well, in many ways, it stole my life. You know, I was not able to work. I was working as a business professor at the time all this started, and I haven't been able to go back to work at all. So I've been on permanent disability. So financially, it wrecked me. And then there was really no roadmap that anybody gave me how to recover for this. Actually, in 2009, I was never checked. I was never given an MRI or a CAT scan or head x-ray or anything. They were just trying to figure out, you know, what was causing this. And, you know, the other stuff was just on the periphery. So any recovery I did was up to me and my own research or experiments. You know, we're all an experiment of one. So I was repeatedly an experiment of one.
Right. And you got to live with kind of the waiting for the other shoe to drop. Things are finally doing well. You're doing better. when's it going to happen again?
Yeah. And that was never really a concern of mine after the first pacemaker, because I didn't know it was going to fail, or that it, yeah. you know, that was anywhere. So, you know, in those first 4 years, I was trying to figure out how to get myself healthy and functional again. So I was taking courses and doing some advanced learning, like way out of my comfort zone. And I was exercising and trying to eat better. And I finally got to a position where I thought I might be able to go back to work. And then it all happened again. So it was back to, you know, ground zero.
Ugh. Man, that just stinks.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
What helped you to be able to?
Mm-hmm. I think what helped a lot was I have a resilience gene from my parents. Well, I guess all genes come from your parents, but, you know, my parents had a pretty difficult life. And it's not like they said, okay, Fred, this is how you be resilient. But from watching them, I guess I picked up some of them and I got some of that gene. And I was able to exercise some of it without really knowing it and somehow remain positive. And I'm Jewish and I have a pretty strong connection to my various Jewish communities. And basically a bunch of people adopted me, you know, people that are just on a different plane of existence from most of us. And I absorbed from them their generosity, they're willing to care for people that, you know, aren't part of their families and support me. And that was a big part of my recovery. Mindset is everything.
That's amazing. Going through all of this, has this affected your core belief system at all? I know you said that you were Jewish. Have you always had a strong connection to God? Has that faltered at all? Has it changed or evolved at all?
I think it's evolved, but I've never really thought when I was younger, like, what does God mean to me? I've always believed in God, even though when I was younger, I wasn't a strongly practicing Jew. I'm much more of that now, although I still have a lot of ways I can improve on that. But the core belief in God never wavered. Like, I've always believed, you know, God created the universe, God created people. I don't think I ever got into the mindset of, like, why is this happening to me? But since it's happened to me, a lot of people have asked me, why has this happened to you? Like, obviously, somebody or something wants to keep you alive. You know, you shouldn't be alive. But why? Why are you alive? You know, what are you supposed to do from all this? And, you know, you can only do a best guess. Like, until right. you actually get to heaven or whatever form of heaven you believe in, and you meet your maker, you're not going to get an answer. My best guess is I'm supposed to be here like you telling your story. I'm supposed to tell my story and hopefully help people that are going through whatever they're going through to get through it a little easier.
I think you have a wonderful opportunity to impact a lot of lives, especially for the people who do experience medical trauma. It's far more common than people realize. Mm-hmm. You know, typically when I talk about my own story, I talk about the human trafficking aspect of it. But what a lot of people don't realize is that back when I was 20 years old, when my son was born, I was rushed into an emergency surgery. I had an emergency 20 years old, and I died three times on the operating table. They had to revive me all three times. Mm-hmm. There's so much trauma that goes into just ending up in the hospital for the smallest of reasons, like a tonsillectomy, or, mm-hmm. you know, you've got a cancer scare, but it doesn't turn out to be cancer. It's still traumatic. And people yeah. need to hear stories like yours to understand that no matter how traumatic it might be or how scary it might be that you're going through this, you still got odds in that you can come out of this well on top and have a profound, incredible story like yours, mm-hmm. like The Summer I Died 20 Times by Fred Ruttman. It's amazing.
Yeah. I don't know if you're in the business world or not. I guess as a podcaster, you are. But there's a consultant named Tom Peters. And many years ago, he wrote the book In Search of Excellence, which was a bestseller for a couple of decades. And he's always railing about medical errors in our system. And in the U.S., every year, 400,000 people die from medical errors.
Goodness gracious.
And, those errors can be anything from, prescribing the wrong drug or the wrong dose, just bad communication, or, the old stories of the surgeon leaving their Rolex inside of you after a surgery.
Ugh.
But those numbers are scary in themselves. And if you think that for guys, probably 10 don't, but that doesn't mean they don't have any repercussions from the medical error.
Right.
So that's a right. Lot
it doesn't
of people...
take it doesn't take death to be traumatic and to be major things wrong.
Yeah. And it's interesting that they say so many fewer people die in car accidents than 20, 30, 40 years ago, but how many more people have become quadriplegics or paraplegics, or worse, because of our new safety systems, it doesn't allow them to be killed, but leaves them still in a horrific frame of life.
Yeah. Wow.
So on that happy note.
Yes, let's elevate it a little bit. How do you celebrate your wins in life? When something goes right, let's say when you published your book, how do you celebrate?
Oh, that's interesting. I've never considered that question. I try to celebrate because I'm always sharing what I'm doing with others. And I think it's just mostly I celebrate by trying to help other people, I think. Whether it's through intermittent fasting, which was, the primary source of my story, to sharing my story or to helping people with whatever they need help with that I can help with.
Very cool.
I'm not a big, let's throw a party kind of person.
Right. I'm not a big party person myself. I'm a little bit more introverted than that, which explains why I'm mm-hmm. audio only on my podcast instead of video. but you mentioned intermittent fasting. How was that helpful with healing?
Oh, it changed everything. Intermittent fasting is the secret super weapon we have that only a few doctors actually understand it and prescribe it. But it's basically the way humans evolved because, we didn't have table-ready food, back in the cave days. It was, if you were lucky enough to, find whatever brontosaurus was roaming the neighborhood and you could take it down, you ate. The parents in the cave weren't sending the kids out to the soccer field with Kool-Aid and sliced oranges to play. We didn't have that regular food source. So our bodies evolved to be intermittent fasters and to, use that to our benefit. So intermittent fasting, according to my friend Jen Stevens, she's my fasting guru, it's the health plan with a side benefit of weight loss. And it's just a pretty amazing list of things that people report change in their bodies after intermittent fasting. Jen actually had a Facebook group with about 335,000 members. And I was a moderator in that group. And what people reported is just amazing. I know for myself, with fasting, I reversed my type 2 diabetes. I got rid of sleep apnea. I got rid of asthma. I had diabetic retinopathy, which is, leakages in have disappeared. I had body-wide inflammation that made it almost impossible to get out of bed some days because my joints just ached. I don't have an ache or pain in my body anymore.
Wow. That's incredible.
Women who couldn't have children because of PCOS, the polycystic ovary syndrome, once they got their insulin levels lowered by fasting, they've had children. Like the PCOS went away.
Wow. That's incredible.
The span of things that this helps is mind-blowing. And doctors know about it, but they don't make money off it. So it doesn't get shared so much.
Right. And, you know, that's something that has only recently come onto my own radar. I have Crohn's disease, chronic hives, and thyroid disease. So I've been struggling with weight gain and loss for years now. And just recently, I was advised by a medical professional that I need to look into intermittent fasting. So it's interesting to hear your take on it and hear how it's helped you so much, because our stories are completely different, and yet it's still.
Oh, what happened?
Oh, can you still hear me?
Yeah, I just heard this big and then you were gone.
Oh, sorry. My boss didn't realize.
There'll be an edit.
Yes, there will be an edit. My boss didn't realize I was podcasting, so I'll have to give him a call back in a minute. So
if we were videoing right now, you could see the book I'm holding up to show you.
The Samurai Died 20 Times?
No. This is the book that launched my intermittent fasting for the most part. Well, there's two books. The first one is The Obesity Code by Dr. Jason Fung. And that's more a science-y book on intermittent fasting. Wow, you are popular.
And sorry.
The second book is Fast, Feast, Repeat by Jen Stevens. And that actually teaches you how to fast. Like all the different protocols, all the tweaks, all the encouragement, stories of other people who have had struggles and how they've come through them. It's your fasting Bible, basically.
Very cool. I'll have to check into that. It's neat.
Or you can always just call me.
There you go. I don't mind that anyway. You're a pretty cool guy.
Thank you.
Speaking of, I'm sitting here looking at the cover of your book, The Summer I Died 20 Times, with the hand holding the medical bracelet, and there's lightning circling around the hand. And reading the subtitle to your book, it says, because lightning does strike the same spot twice. Well, more than twice. I mean, the title is The Summer I Died 20 Times. Holy cow. It's a pretty new book. But it seems like people are really enjoying it already. Have you got a part of your book that you would like to read for the audience?
Well, I know it's random, but yes, I do. I can read some of the prologue.
Okay.
And a lot of this is about the book itself. So, but, you know, we'll let the audience let us know if they enjoy it. The Summer I Died 20 Times isn't just a cool or metaphorical title. In the summer of 2009, I was clinically dead 20 times that we know of. Heart stopped, no breathing, ready for the toe tag. And then I wasn't. Most times I died, I also collapsed, hit my head violently, and suffered a concussion. Concussions and oxygen deprivation are a pretty terrible combination for sustaining brain functionality. Or staying alive. I experienced memory loss, balance issues, depth perception problems, as well as PTSD and post-concussion syndrome, to name just a few issues. It's been pretty awful. It also helps explain why my writing style can sometimes go off the rails on some very weird tangents. Real-life conversations can be a trip. We know what the medical condition is that caused all this. You'll have to wait a bit to learn what it is. For now, let's look at some numbers and odds. Roughly 40,000 Canadians and 400,000 Americans die from medical errors yearly. This story is about how I avoided being one of the 40,000, being in Canada, of course. course. It wasn't easy. 11 heart procedures in 11 years, being clinically dead dozens of times, concussions, PTSD, brain trauma, defective pacemakers, botched surgeries, cognitive medical bias, learning to self-advocate, and digging deeper than I ever imagined I could. They did their best to add me to the total. Many attempts were too damn close. I was told what happened to me was a one in a billion series of events. Thankfully, I've beaten the odds every time. I know more surgeries are coming. I'm clearly playing with house money. The question is, will I beat the odds the next time?
Wow.
Of the 20, do you want me to continue?
Yeah, keep going.
Okay. Of the 20 deaths, the was on me. My body malfunctioned. That's pretty straightforward. All the subsequent times were because of medical misdiagnosis and non-treatment. But come on, we all know dying is pretty permanent. The only guarantees are death and taxes, right? Look at any cemetery. Outside of the horror films, ain't nobody coming out of there. Times, one would have to come back to life 20 times. How is this even possible? For the conspiracy theorists, flat earthers out there, there was no deal with the devil, witchcraft, Illuminati, or any sort of magic bring me back to life. I don't know about you, but I surely would have struck a better deal to simply live longer and better, leaving out the dying parts. To be honest, nobody knows what kept bringing me back. I was told every story needs a hook, something or things that give the reader something to latch on to. Keeping them. Having written and lived the story, I see hooks all over the place. That's me. My gift to you is providing some structure, a bit of a treasure map to ensure you get hooked and enjoy the journey. Let's turn one in a million into something pretty familiar to most of you, playing the lottery. You don't need to be a mathlete or follow along. Doesn't matter what lottery you play, or which version of the lottery, or whether you play it regularly or occasionally, or just hear about them. There are stories of people winning big, and stories of many losing all their winnings soon after, or other assorted tales. Regardless, you know the odds aren't in your favor. Goes, the house always wins. Here in Canada, the odds of winning a single lottery 649 are about 1 in 14.5 million. Obviously, my one in a billion is significantly rarer. But wait, there's more. You need to be old enough to recall that tagline from the Ron Popeil late night gadget ads. Or be old enough to remember watching TV and commercials. You know, the pre-streaming world, I guess. Keep in mind that I am not playing for a financial jackpot. In fact, I had no desire to play at all. Against my will, it forced me into playing for the ultimate stakes, my life. Each time I played, the odds got worse, much worse. Let me try to hook you some more. I didn't give any thought to the precision of that one in a billion number. The number really didn't matter. Everybody seemed to understand it's a really small number. I had more important things to worry about. Things like recovering from my physical, mental, and emotional battering and getting my life back. So I just accepted that is a valid number until somebody gave me a reason to challenge that number. And I mean, really challenge it. In April of 2022, I was a guest on Dr. Stephen Neff's Steps to Sobriety podcast. Stephen is a retired ER anesthetist. You know, one of those superstars who has done it and seen it all. Fascinating guy who has reinvented himself many times over. You should give his podcast a listen. Of course, after you listen to this podcast. in our chat, Stephen told me that people who experience my condition outside of a hospital setting have a less than 1% chance of survival if that happens to you once. Inside a hospital, the survival rate can go up to 30 or 40%, but not anywhere near the 100% you see on TV. 17 of my events were outside the hospital. The events in the may as well have been outside, as I wasn't really given any treatment and I came back to life on my own. Stephen then added that the odds of survival decreased significantly with each subsequent event. Today, I was writing this May 11th of 2022. I learned that cumulatively, this number gets small, really small, indescribably small. How do I know this? Well, I told our family statistician, Dr. Beatles. What? Doesn't every family have a world-class statistician on speed dial? I shared Stephen's numbers with him. You know what's amazing about this? And I'm not reading it, but nobody asked me why he's called Dr. Beatles.
I love the name. I used to have a dentist named Dr. Perfecto. There's just something about these names. It's just epic.
Yeah. Actually, almost everybody in the book has a code name. To protect them. So that's not his real name.
Why is he called Dr. Beatles? I got to know.
Well, he's a huge Beatles fan. Oh. And as part of his academic research, he actually studies Beatles musics and the... there's math in all sorts of music. So doesn't know about Beatles music. It's quite phenomenal.
That's pretty
professional
cool.
Musician as well. So I asked Dr. Beatles if 1 in a billion was small enough. He said, no, it's going to be an incomprehensibly small number. Several years ago, a Canadian couple won the lottery twice in 7 years. And a news outlet asked Dr. Beatles what the odds of that were. He calculated 4 in 10 billion. So off the top of his head, what happened to me realm, as I mentioned, winning some major lottery every week for 5 years straight kind of odds.
Oh.
Using my basic statistics knowledge, I tried to go on a spreadsheet and it ran out of zeros. In other words, even the mighty Excel couldn't create numbers small enough. Even my neighbor, the actuary, couldn't wrap his head around this number. There's really no reason I should be alive or any level of functional. I mentioned the need to give you structure and hook the story. In a sentence I never thought I'd write, I'm trying to be your very enticing hooker. This is a story that checks off almost all the foundational aspects of great tales. Overcoming adversity, resilience, beating the odds, making a comeback, mystery, humor, sarcasm, some dark humor, cliffhangers, medical trauma, botch surgeries, medical device failures, and a happily ever after ending. And it's no longer politically correct to say a happy ending. Even doctors don't believe what happened to me or my level of recovery. The angel of death took me off his list. I already put in enough effort, he mumbled. I'm done. Or something like that. He's not overly chatty. Based on the feedback received from sharing my experience on a few dozen podcasts, many find me a source of inspiration and hope. I hope this helps them and their audiences through their own personal trials. I hope this book does the same. Last, I'm writing this as a tribute testimonial for everyone, be they the medical staff, friends and family, people I know via social media, or anybody who has come into my world and made me a better person. I literally wouldn't be here. Even though I've recovered a lot, my brain is still not back to normal. I apologize in advance, but I tend to think and recall things less linearly these days. Memories and concepts pop out of nowhere and at the strangest times. You know, because of brain damage and all. Like yesterday, I have no idea why I had to call Dr. Beatles and discuss our 1 in a billion occurrence. It just showed up, as do many thoughts in my book. And to me, it seemed urgent and needed to be addressed immediately. So I've made the conscious effort to include many of these tangents as it helps to reinforce how one's mind can be altered via traumatic brain injuries. These tangents make perfect sense to me, but maybe not initially to you. I'm confident you will catch on. Welcome to the world of non-visible disabilities, my new reality.
I love that last line. Welcome to the world of non-visible disabilities. I've known a lot of people who have lived with non-visible disabilities such as autism, and they feel unseen so often because people look at them and assume that they're just like everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was at dinner with some friends, a couple, and I was trying to explain this, and one of them kept saying to me, but you don't seem to have any impairment. Well, I'm sorry I can't like really show you what's going on or not going on in my brain and my body. But you know, it's there. It really is there.
Yeah. So. Yep. And Fred, I see that you are on LinkedIn. You're on, of course, Amazon. You're on Instagram. You've got a Facebook author page, and you've got your Dead Man Walking podcast. You guys go follow this podcast. You're going to get something out of this. There is always one last question that I ask my guests before I let them go, but I'm just going to let everybody know that I'm going to make sure that this is all included in the podcast description so that people can follow you online. They can go out and grab your book and they can get more inspiration all about Fred Ruttmann, Repeatedly Dead Fred. But my one last question that I always ask people is, what's one thing that you love about yourself that's not related to your physical appearance?
Wow. That is a deep, deep question.
Yes.
I think it has to be how I'm continually working on. I've always had that attribute that I'm always trying to learn something. I'm a very curious person, so believe it or not, one of the funnest things of my week is calling an Uber because you're guaranteed to meet somebody from somewhere else in the world and you can have a nice conversation with somebody without having to travel to their country. And you get to learn so much about other people's attitudes and how they live and how they became who they are. And it just helps. Being a continuous learner is possibly the greatest gift you can have.
That's amazing. That's fantastic.
And I would have to agree with that 100%. Learning is what helps us with healing, with overcoming challenges, with keeping our brains young. There's mm-hmm. so many benefits to just continually learning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Fred, thank you so much for spending your time with me today. I appreciate your story. I think you're incredible, and I hope that lots of people go out and go grab this book. For one thing, the cover is just gorgeous, but the message inside is even more beautiful.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on, and I'm glad we're not on video right now because you've just made me blush, probably deep blushed in a long time.
I just love you. You're fun. Welcome back to the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Amanda Blackwood. I have a gentleman with me today with an unusual nickname that might kind of take you by surprise. He goes by Repeatedly Dead Fred, and when he tells you his story as to where that nickname came from, it's all going to make sense. Welcome to the show, Fred. I'm super excited to get to know you today.
Thank you, Amanda. I'm happy to be here. Actually, I'm happy to be anywhere.
I bet you are with your story. My word. So I usually start out the podcast by asking my guests, where are you originally from? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a prairie city called Winnipeg in the province of Manitoba in Canada. And I am currently in Toronto, the center of the universe, according to some people.
And I love Canada. I've been there a few times. I used to be a flight attendant, would fly up there all the time. It's one of my favorite countries outside of the US. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about your journey. What happened? What was your traumatic event that kind of catapulted you into writing your book and telling your story?
Well, I went through an absurd large amount of medical trauma and just a continuous loop that somebody calculated to me that the odds of my going through all this and still being alive is the equivalent of winning a weekly lottery every day for 5 years.
Goodness.
So all sorts of medical cognitive dissonance and medical bias and, everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And I don't want to make it seem like I'm slamming the medical system because every system has its ups and downs. This is just what happened to me, and I'm not assigning blame. I'm just telling my story. So in the summer of 2009, I started passing out randomly, or that's what the doctors initially thought. And they kept trying to prove I was having a heart attack, and I wasn't having heart attacks, but you think, you know, after you test somebody, you know, 10, 12, 15 times, and you don't see, and you see they're not having a heart attack, maybe you should try and think something else might be going on. And it took a long time for that to happen. So it took until August of 2009 for them to figure out that what was actually going on was my heart was stopping. And I don't know about you guys, but when my heart, I tend to die.
So. I think that's the general consensus.
Yeah. So I had the double whammy of, you know, my heart would stop beating, no blood to the brain, no oxygen, and I would collapse. And most of the times I collapsed, I managed to hit my head on what object in the vicinity and, you know, obtained a bunch of concussions on top of the, you know, lack of oxygen and all the other trauma that happens to your body when your heart stops. And then we went from there. And so that's sort of the basics of what happened to me. And then they corrected it with a pacemaker, and which was great until the pacemaker failed. And
those things aren't supposed to fail.
Yeah, you know, that's what I thought. And it's sort of what happens when you buy your medical supplies at the dollar store. So, yeah, there's a whole bunch of conspiracy things in my mind anyway, that something happened in this surgery that didn't go into the surgical report. And it made the pacemaker wires prone to cracking. Mm. And so they short circuit, and they short circuit, you short circuit.
Yes.
So I had a couple more adventures in 2013 with more surgeries. And then again in 2018. And this, you know, I'm going beyond my first book here, The Summer I Died 20 Times. And I just had another surgery with a pacemaker replacement in November of 2022, where they worked some Harry Potter level wizardry on me.
And goodness gracious.
Yeah, it's been quite the adventure.
Wow. So when a pacemaker gives out, boy, that was a Southern accent that just came out there. Mm-hmm. When a pacemaker gives out, do you know immediately? Do you have like internal warning signs? Do you have a medical device that is a monitor? How do you know?
Basically you feel your heart stopping because you're not getting oxygenated. And then you're gone. Like,
wow.
You're just gone.
So it happens that quick when your pacemaker gives out.
Yeah. The odd time, I was able to get me. And so when I fell, it wasn't as traumatic as the other times, but if you're standing, I'm like 7 feet tall or anything, but it's a big difference, you know, falling over from it is from fully standing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Falling from a full height, you got to have all kinds of issues just coming up from that. First of all, your heart's just giving out because of your pacemaker, but then you got to deal with, you know, concussions and bleeding and injuries and possibly broken bones. I mean, mm-hmm. At that point, you're just an instant mess.
Yeah. That's the amazing thing. For all the times I hit whatever part of my head, I didn't break anything.
Wow.
You know, I did get cut a few times. Depending on the way you fall and what you fall against, you know, if you fall at the right angle and you're wearing glasses, you can end up with glasses cutting you and giving you some pretty good shiners. But I've clunked myself commercial cement countertops, manhole covers.
Oh my gosh.
You know, I mean, sometimes I feel like I'm Wile E. Coyote, if you remember that comic.
I love Looney Tunes.
Yeah. It's just all the most ridiculous ways to die or to get a concussion. That seemed to be what I was experiencing.
Just everything short of having the anvil dropped on your head, it sounds like.
Oh, I forgot to mention that one.
So how has all of this trauma, kind of impacted your life going forward?
Well, in many ways, it stole my life. You know, I was not able to work. I was working as a business professor at the time all this started, and I haven't been able to go back to work at all. So I've been on permanent disability. So financially, it wrecked me. And then there was really no roadmap that anybody gave me how to recover for this. Actually, in 2009, I was never checked. I was never given an MRI or a CAT scan or head x-ray or anything. They were just trying to figure out, you know, what was causing this. And, you know, the other stuff was just on the periphery. So any recovery I did was up to me and my own research or experiments. You know, we're all an experiment of one. So I was repeatedly an experiment of one.
Right. And you got to live with kind of the waiting for the other shoe to drop. Things are finally doing well. You're doing better. When's it going to happen again?
Yeah. And that was never really a concern of mine after the first pacemaker, because I didn't know it was going to fail or that that was anywhere. So, you know, in those first 4 years, I was trying to figure out how to get myself healthy and functional again. So I was taking courses and doing some advanced learning, like way out of my comfort zone. And I was exercising and trying to eat better. And I finally got to a position where I thought I might be able to go back to work. And then it all happened again. So it was back to, you know, ground zero.
Ugh. Man, that just stinks.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
What helped you to be able to?
Mm-hmm. I think what helped a lot was I have a resilience gene from my parents. Well, I guess all genes come from your parents, but, you know, my parents had a pretty difficult life. And it's not like they said, okay, Fred, this is how you be resilient. But from watching them, I guess I picked up some of them and I got some of that gene, and I was able to exercise some of it without really knowing it and somehow remain positive. And I'm Jewish, and I have a pretty strong connection to my various Jewish communities, and basically a bunch of people adopted me, you know, people that are just on a different plane of existence from most of us. And I absorbed from them their generosity, they're willing to care for people that, you know, aren't part of their families and support me. And that was a big part of my recovery. Mindset is everything.
That's amazing. Going through all of this, has this affected your core belief system at all? I know you said that you were Jewish. Have you always had a strong connection to God? Has that faltered at all? Has it changed or evolved at all?
I think it's evolved, but I've never really thought when younger, like, what does God mean to me? I've always believed in God, even though when I was younger, I wasn't a strongly practicing Jew. I'm much more of that now. I still have a lot of ways I can improve on that. But the core belief in God never wavered. Like, I've always believed, you know, God created the universe, God created people. I don't think I ever got into the mindset of, like, why is this happening to me? since it's happened to me, a lot of people have asked me, why has this happened to you? Like, obviously somebody or something wants to keep you alive. You know, you shouldn't be alive. So why are you alive? You know, what are you supposed to do from all this? And, you know, you can only do a best guess. Like, until right. you actually get to heaven or whatever form of heaven you believe in, and you meet your maker, you're not going to get an answer. My best guess is I'm supposed to be here like you, telling your story. I'm supposed to tell my story and hopefully help people that are going through whatever they're going through to get through it a little easier.
I think you have a wonderful opportunity to impact a lot of lives, especially for the people who do experience medical trauma. It's far more common than people realize. Mm-hmm. You know, typically when I talk about my own story, I talk about the human trafficking aspect of it. But what a lot of people don't realize is that back when I was 20 years old, when my son was born, I was rushed into an emergency surgery. I had an emergency 20 years old, and I died three times on the operating table. They had to revive me all three times. Mm-hmm. There's so much trauma that goes into just ending up in the hospital for the smallest of reasons, like a tonsillectomy, or, mm-hmm. you know, you've got a cancer scare, but it doesn't turn out to be cancer. It's still traumatic. And people yeah. need to hear stories like yours to understand that no matter how traumatic it might be or how scary it might be that you're going through this, you still got odds in that you can come out of this well on top and have a profound, incredible story like yours, mm-hmm. like The Summer I Died 20 Times by Fred Ruttman. It's amazing.
Yeah. I don't know if you're in the business world or not. I guess as a podcaster, you are. But there's a consultant named Tom Peters. And many years ago, he wrote the book In Search of Excellence, which was a bestseller for, you know, a couple of decades. And he's always railing about medical errors in our system. And in the US every year, 400,000 people die from medical errors.
Goodness gracious.
And, you know, those errors can be anything from, you know, prescribing the wrong drug or the wrong dose, just bad communication, or, you know, the old stories of the surgeon leaving their Rolex inside of you after a surgery.
Ugh.
But those numbers are scary in themselves. And if you think that for guys, you know, probably 10 don't, but that doesn't mean they don't have any repercussions from the medical error.
Right.
So that's a right. lot
it doesn't
of people.
It doesn't take death to traumatic and to be major things wrong.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that they say so many fewer people die in car accidents than, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. But how many more people have become quadriplegics or paraplegics, you know, or worse because, you know, of our new safety systems, it doesn't allow them to be killed, but leaves them still in a horrific frame of life.
Yeah. Wow.
So on that happy note.
Yes, let's elevate it a little bit. How do you celebrate your wins in life? When something goes right, let's say when you published your book, how do you celebrate?
Oh, that's interesting. I've never considered that question. I try to celebrate because I'm always sharing what I'm doing with others. And I think it's just mostly I celebrate by trying to help other people. I think, you know, whether it's through intermittent fasting, which was, you know, the primary source of my story, to sharing my story or to helping people with whatever they need help with that I can help with.
Very cool.
You know, I'm not a big, you know, let's throw a party kind of person.
Right. I'm not a big party person myself. I'm a little bit more introverted than that, which explains why I'm mm-hmm. audio only on my podcast instead of video. but you mentioned intermittent fasting. How was that helpful with healing?
Oh, it changed everything. Intermittent fasting is this secret super weapon we have that only a few doctors actually understand it and prescribe it. But it's basically the way humans evolved, because, you know, we didn't have table ready food, you know, back in the cave days. It was, if you were lucky enough to, you know, find whatever brontosaurus was roaming the neighborhood and you could take it down, you ate. You know, the parents in the cave weren't sending the kids out to the soccer field with Kool-Aid and sliced oranges to play. We didn't have that regular food source. So our bodies evolved to be intermittent fasters and to, you know, use that to our benefit. So intermittent fasting, according to my friend Jen Stevens, she's my fasting guru, it's the health plan with a side benefit of weight loss. And it's just a pretty amazing list of things that people report change in their bodies after intermittent fasting. Jen actually had a Facebook group with about 335,000 members. And I was a moderator in that group. And what people reported is just amazing. I know for myself, with fasting, I reversed my type 2 diabetes. I got rid of sleep apnea. I got rid of asthma. I had diabetic retinopathy, which is, you know, leakages in have disappeared. I had body-wide inflammation that made it almost impossible to get out of bed some days because my joints just ached. I don't have an ache or pain in my body anymore.
Wow. That's incredible.
Women who couldn't have children because of PCOS, the polycystic ovary syndrome, once they got their insulin levels lowered by fasting, they've had children. Like, the PCOS went away.
Wow. That's
the span of things that this helps is mind-blowing. And doctors know about it, but they don't make money off it. So it doesn't get shared so much.
Right. And, you know, that's something that has only recently come onto my own radar. I have Crohn's disease, chronic hives, and thyroid disease. So I've been struggling with weight gain and loss for years now. And just recently, I was advised by a medical professional that I need to look into intermittent fasting. So it's interesting to hear your take on it and hear how it's helped you so much, because our stories are completely different. And yet it's still.
Oh, what happened?
Oh, can you still hear me?
Yeah, I just heard this big and then you were gone.
Oh, sorry. My boss didn't realize. There'll be an edit. Yes, there will be an edit. My boss didn't realize I was podcasting, so I'll have to give him a call back in a minute. So
if we were videoing right now, you could see the book I'm holding up to show you.
The Samurai Died 20 Times?
No. This is the book that launched my intermittent fasting for the most part. Well, there's two books. The first one is The Obesity Code by Dr. Jason Fung. And that's more a science-y book on intermittent fasting. Wow, you are popular.
And sorry.
The second book is Fast, Feast, Repeat by Jen Stevens. And that actually teaches you how to fast. Like all the different protocols, all the tweaks, all the encouragement, stories of other people who have had struggles and how they've come through them. It's your fasting Bible, basically.
Very cool. I'll have to check into that. It's neat.
Or you can always just call me.
There you go. I don't mind that anyway. You're a pretty cool guy.
Thank you.
Speaking of, I'm sitting here looking at the cover of your book, The Summer I Died 20 Times, with the hand holding the medical bracelet, and there's lightning circling around the hand, and reading the subtitle to your book, It says, because lightning does strike the same spot twice. Well, more than twice. I mean, the title is The Summer I Died 20 Times. Holy cow. It's a pretty new book, but it seems like people are really enjoying it already. Have you got a part of your book that you would like to read for the audience?
Well, I know it's random, but yes, I do. I can read some of the prologue.
Okay.
And a lot of this is about the book itself. So, but, you know, we'll let the audience let us know if they enjoy it.
Okay.
The Summer I Died 20 Times isn't just a cool or metaphorical title. In the summer of 2009, I was clinically dead 20 times that we know of. Heart stopped, no breathing, ready for the toe tag. And then I wasn't. Most times I died, I also collapsed, hit my head violently, and suffered a concussion. Concussions and oxygen deprivation are a pretty terrible combination for sustaining brain functionality or staying alive. I experienced memory loss, balance issues, depth perception problems, as well as PTSD and post-concussion syndrome, to name just a few issues. It's been pretty awful. It also helps explain why my writing style can sometimes go off the rails on some very weird tangents. Real-life conversations can be a trip. We know what the medical condition is that caused all this. You'll have to wait a bit to learn what it is. For now, let's look at some numbers and odds. Roughly 40,000 Canadians and 400,000 Americans die from medical errors yearly. This story is about how I avoided being one of the 40,000, being in Canada, of course. It wasn't easy. 11 heart procedures in 11 years, being clinically dead dozens of times, concussions, PTSD, brain trauma, defective pacemakers, botched surgeries, cognitive medical bias, learning to self-advocate, and digging deeper than I ever imagined I could. They did their best to add me to the total. Many attempts were too damn close. I was told what happened to me was a one in a billion series of events. Thankfully, I've beaten the odds every time. I know more surgeries are coming. I'm clearly playing with house money. The question is, will I beat the odds the next time?
Wow.
Of the 20, do you want me to continue?
Yeah, keep going.
Okay. Of the 20 deaths, the was on me. My body malfunctioned. That's pretty straightforward. All the subsequent times were because of medical misdiagnosis and non-treatment. But come on, we all know dying is pretty permanent. The only guarantees are death and taxes, right? Look at any cemetery. Outside of the horror films, ain't nobody coming out of there. Times, one would have to come back to life 20 times. How is this even possible? For the conspiracy theorists, flat earthers out there, there was no deal with the devil, witchcraft, Illuminati, or any sort of magic bringing me back to life. I don't know about you, but I surely would have struck a better deal to simply live longer and better, leaving out the dying parts. To be honest, nobody knows what kept bringing me back. I was told every story needs a hook, something or things that give the reader something to latch on to. Keeping them. Having written and lived the story, I see hooks all over the place. That's me. My gift to you is providing some structure, a bit of a treasure map to ensure you get hooked and enjoy the journey. Let's turn one in a million into something pretty familiar to most of you, playing the lottery. You don't need to be a mathlete or follow along. Doesn't matter what lottery you play, or which version of the lottery, or whether you play it regularly or occasionally, or just hear about them. There are stories of people winning big, and stories of many losing all their winnings soon after, or other assorted tales. Regardless, you know the odds aren't in your favor. Goes, the house always wins. Here in Canada, the odds of winning a single lottery 649 are about 1 in 14.5 million. Obviously, my one in a billion is significantly rarer. But wait, there's more. You need to be old enough to recall that tagline from the Ron Popeil late night gadget ads, or be old enough to remember watching TV and commercials. You know, the pre-streaming world, I guess. Keep in mind that I am not playing for a financial jackpot. In fact, I had no desire to play at all. Against my will, it forced me into playing for the ultimate stakes, my life. Each time I played, the odds got worse, much worse. Let me try to hook you some more. I didn't give any thought to the precision of that one in a billion number. The number really didn't matter. Everybody seemed to understand it's a really small number. I had more important things to worry about. Things like recovering from my physical, mental, and emotional battering and getting my life back. So I just accepted that as a valid number until somebody gave me a reason to challenge that number. And I mean really challenge it. In April of 2022, I was a guest on Dr. Stephen Neff's Steps to Sobriety podcast. Stephen is a retired ER anesthetist. You know, one of those superstars who has done it and seen it all. Fascinating guy who has reinvented himself many times over. You should give his podcast a listen. Of course, after you listen to this podcast. in our chat, Stephen told me that people who experience my condition outside of a hospital setting have a less than 1% chance of survival if that happens to you once. Inside a hospital, the survival rate can go up to 30 or 40%, but not anywhere near the 100% you see on TV. 17 of my events were outside the hospital. The events in the hospital may as well have been outside, as I wasn't really given any treatment and I came back to life on my own. Stephen then added that the odds of survival decreased significantly with each subsequent event. Today, I was writing this May 11th of 2022, I learned that cumulatively this number gets small, really small, indescribably small. How do I know this? Well, I called our family statistician, Dr. Beatles. What? Doesn't every family have a world-class statistician on speed dial? I shared Stephen's numbers with him. You know what's amazing about this? And I'm not reading it, but nobody asked me why he's called Dr. Beatles.
So, I love the name. I used to have a dentist named Dr. Perfecto. There's just something about these names. It's just epic.
Yeah. Actually, almost everybody in the book has a code name. To protect them. So that's not his real name.
So why is he called Dr. Beatles? I got to know.
Well, he's a huge Beatles fan. And as part of his academic research, he actually studies Beatles' musics, and there's math in all sorts of music. So doesn't know about Beatles' music. It's quite phenomenal. He's
that's pretty
professional
cool.
Musician as well. So I asked Dr. Beatles if 1 in a billion was small enough. He said, no, it's going to be an incomprehensibly small number. Several years ago, a Canadian couple won the lottery twice in 7 years, and a news outlet asked Dr. Beatles what the odds of that were. He calculated 4 in 10 billion. So off the top of his head, what happened to me in the realm, as I mentioned, winning some major lottery every week for 5 years straight kind of odds.
Oh.
Using my basic statistics knowledge, I tried to go on a spreadsheet, and it ran out of zeros. In other words, even the mighty Excel couldn't create numbers small enough. Even my neighbor, the actuary, couldn't wrap his head around this number. There's really no reason I should be alive or any level of functional. I mentioned the need to give you structure and story. In a sentence I never thought I'd write, I'm trying to be your very enticing hooker. This is a story that checks off almost all the foundational aspects of great tales: overcoming adversity, resilience, beating the odds, making a comeback, mystery, humor, sarcasm, some dark humor, cliffhangers, medical trauma, botched surgeries, medical device failures, and a happily ever after ending. And it's no longer politically correct to say a happy ending. Even doctors don't believe what happened to me or my level of recovery. The angel of death took me off his list. I already put in enough effort, he mumbled. I'm done, or something like that. He's not overly chatty. Based on the feedback received from sharing my experience on a few dozen podcasts, many find me a source of inspiration and hope. I hope this helps them and their audiences through their own personal trials. I hope this book does the same. Last, I'm writing this as a tribute testimonial for everyone, be they the medical staff, friends and family, people I know via social media, or anybody who has come into my world and made me a better person. I literally wouldn't be here with you. Even though I've recovered a lot, my brain is still not back to normal. I apologize in advance, but I tend to think and recall things less linearly these days. Memories and concepts pop out of nowhere and at the strangest times. You know, because of brain damage and all. Like yesterday, I have no idea why I had to call Dr. Beatles and discuss our one in a billion occurrence. It just showed up, as do many thoughts in my book. And to me, it seemed urgent and needed to be addressed immediately. So I've made the conscious effort to include many of these tangents as it helps to reinforce how one's mind can be altered via traumatic brain injuries. These tangents make perfect sense to me, but maybe not initially to you. I'm confident you will catch on. Welcome to the world of non-visible disabilities, my new reality.
I love that last line. Welcome to the world of non-visible disabilities. I've known a lot of people who have lived with non-visible disabilities, such as autism. And they feel unseen so often because people look at them and assume that they're just like everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was at dinner with some friends, a couple, and I was trying to explain this. And one of them kept saying to me, "But you don't seem to have any impairment." Well, I'm sorry, I can't like really show you what's going on or not going on in my brain and my body, but you know, it's there. It really is there.
Yeah. Yep. And Fred, I see that you are on LinkedIn. You're on, of course, Amazon. You're on Instagram. You've got a Facebook author page, and you've got your Dead Man Walking podcast. You guys go follow this podcast. You're going to get something out of this. There is always one last question that I ask my guests before I let them go, but I'm just going to let everybody know that I'm going to make sure that this is all included in the podcast description so that people can follow you online. They can go out and grab your book and they can get more inspiration all about Fred Ruttman, repeatedly dead Fred. But my one last question that I always ask people is, what's one thing that you love about yourself that's not related to your physical appearance?
Wow. That is a deep, deep question.
Yes.
I think it has to be how I'm continually working on. I've always had that attribute that I'm always trying to learn something. I'm a very curious person, so believe it or not, one of the funnest things of my week is calling an Uber because you're guaranteed to meet somebody from somewhere else in the world and you can have a nice conversation with somebody without having to travel to their country. And you get to learn so much about other people's attitudes and how they live and how they became who they are. And it just helps. Being a continuous learner is possibly the greatest gift you can have.
That's amazing. That's fantastic.
And I would have to agree with that 100%. Learning is what helps us with healing, with overcoming challenges, with keeping our brains young. There's so many benefits to just continually learning. Fred, thank you so much for spending your time with me today. I appreciate your story. I think you're incredible, and I hope that lots of people go out and go grab this book. For one thing, the cover is just gorgeous, but the message inside is even more beautiful.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on, and I'm glad we're not on video right now because you just made me blush, probably deep blushed in a long time.
I just love you. You're fun.